Good morning. I am Dr. Christina Hind, and this is Brass Tacks Sunday. Happy New Year to all. I wish you the best for 2021. Today is January the 3rd, and this is the first show of the year for Brass Tacks. I am fortunate to be the first to offer you well wishes on behalf of the Brass Tacks family. As you will know, I am the last entrant into the Brass Tacks family. And as I said, the last shall be the first. And so it is with us today for 2021. And more than ever, I think at the start of this year, we need these well wishes, considering the way that 2021 has commenced in Barbados with 194 COVID cases in 48 hours. And I'm sure this number will increase. So today we're going to look back on 2020, paying special attention to the impact of COVID-19 on the year just passed. And just as we had plans for 2020 and the plans were disrupted, we had plans for today's show to speak to those who are working on the front lines. We wanted to speak to some people who would have been working in the labs, to hear from them what challenges they face, what this was like over the course of the year. We wanted to speak to public health officials, but as we are all aware, this current situation has called them all to work ever more at this point in time. So we've had to make some changes to the program today. We are also going to speak to some who have been working in the private sector, whose businesses have been affected positively, negatively, perhaps mixed by the ongoing pandemic. What I want to say, though, is that although we are paying special attention to this pandemic, the emergence of the pandemic has not been the only important issue of 2020. It has influenced and colored elements of our life in many different areas, but we have also had other things occur during the year, as you all know. We've had elections across the region, including a by-election here in Barbados. We've had a curious and contentious US presidential election. We saw the Black Lives Matter protests all over the world, including here in Barbados, which have been connected to the removal of Lord Nelson's statue in Bridgetown. And Barbados continues to address financial recovery, let's call it. And this is complicated all the more by the public health emergency that is the COVID-19 pandemic that we can add, as I have seen in today's paper coming out of CARFA, to other public health issues that we were already experiencing. All of these things have been affected by COVID-19, as has this broadcast today. We welcome your calls. The number to call is 434-1790. You can reach us on WhatsApp at 266-4682. We have with us via Zoom, Mr. Wayne Willock, and he can talk to us a bit about how his business has been affected by the current pandemic. Would you like to begin, Mr. Willock?
Thank you, Christina.
You're most welcome.
Interestingly enough, I was really looking forward to hearing from the actual frontline workers who I know are really probably haven't had much time with the family because of previous and now even more so present present danger. So if I could talk a bit about my stuff. I had a conversation with Mr. Ellis earlier, late last week, but I can say that my Rokitok Inc. business has been a part of the tourism sector for a very long time. Well, let's say about 25 years. And in that period of time, we have serviced several hotels in Barbados, both West Coast, South Coast, any coast. We've been involved in, of course, Crop Over Festival. We have also traveled to many other countries as ambassadors. taking our Tukba music and cultural elements with us. We have been terribly affected, so much so that I noticed on the BRA portal that there's an aspect where you can ask for suspension of this whole VAT issue. So I've applied for that to take me into September this year. Hopefully, we are hoping that that things might improve by that time. In the last few days, we were able to do two or three little things, of course, at a very reduced rate with some faithful clients who know that we will normally serve them even in rough times. So we are thankful to those who took us on. And I would say that will be the Seabreeze Beach House, Bougainvillea, Sugar Bay, and of course, Butterfly. We also did something at Colony Club. So outside of those, between March and today, that's what has been done, just two or three things. And I, based on what's happening now, I'm not really very hopeful in the near future. So my issue too is that I have people who would have been working with me who've actually had to change their focus, which I have had to do too, change their focus. So we have people who have started to sell food, people who are getting into selling other items and even doing massage. I have a friend who stopped from the circuit and is now doing tiling.
Okay.
So it's good and it's bad. It's good because we have to always look at plan B and be able to find alternatives, although we know that the tourism element has been a key factor in our economy for many, many years. But plan B is very important so that we can stay alive, because some of these stimulus packages, I suppose the government can only do as much as it can do. But even within what has been done, I would say, for example, the fund access issue, where we've seen that many of the, quite a bit of the stimulus package was not really accessed by.
Why do you think that is?
Sometimes the modalities involved and the technical aspects involved are a bit challenging. I would also want to say that what was given to fund access really was allowing people to get a $500 per employee that you're keeping on, inclusive of the directors themselves. And if you can imagine, between March and now, $500 really isn't cutting it. But you have some funds left back, I believe we could look at some grants, especially for its members who have been terribly affected, but who have been very faithful members over a long period of time. Of course, like Rukita, you know, you got to blow your own trumpet. Look at grants, or instead of a grant, do some debt forgiveness or something like that, where you don't actually receive money, but you are able not to have to pay, which is starting to amount to a grant. So, you know, you reverse it. And well, the NCF is trying as well, but I have some, what I would say, pluses and minuses to that program as well. In terms of, Yeah, in terms of what is required, again, the modalities, things that have to fit into the package. And when you look at the fact that the persons who are providing a service for the project that you are going to, that you're subscribing to do, that you're actually, you're sending in a project and you want to do this project, the funds, if you get through those funds, most of it go to the providers. In other words, if I want to do a video or I want to do something with my website or whatever, the persons who are technically involved are the persons who really get the money. Right. The person like my Stilt Walker or my Shaggy Bear or my dancers, there's nothing there for them unless I'm able to factor in enough to pay the provider and everybody. Then you might go outside of the 15,000, which you can't do. So the person who's the person who's actually suggesting this project for verification, when the funds come, you got to find a way to factor in some sort of berry for yourself. And that berry is going to take you for a month or two. And then you're out of commission again. But it is a valid effort. And I believe that many people have benefited. I'm glad for them. But it is still not as easy to work with, either as a company or as an individual.
Okay. So if we look back on the year, we got into this period of COVID-19 lockdowns, curfews, the decline in our tourist numbers around March. What was it like for you between January and March? Were things looking as if they were going in a positive direction for your business, which is both within the cultural industry sector and the tourism sector, right?
Yes, I would say it was looking quite bright. We were doing some regular gigs, and that is as a company, we were doing some regular gigs that were looking to flourish and going into a fruitful year. But all of that stopped suddenly. Even on a personal level, I was involved with regathering. And of course, suddenly you couldn't gather anymore. And so I got knocked out in two areas, really, mm-hmm. as company and as individual, because, you know, as a retired person, yes, Dennis, as a retired person, it can be very challenging balancing pension, a late mortgage, the insurances for those mortgages, no help from the bank, et cetera. Because, you know, even I had a company vehicle. Unfortunately, I got it sold in February, just before COVID cut in, without any knowledge of COVID cutting in. So that worked out. Everybody, bank would be behind me all like, no. Although they are still behind me. But even these moratoriums that were given to individuals and even companies who have property and so on, just imagine that they tell you get a moratorium for 3 months, 4 months. And then from this month in January, you have to pay more money on your monthly installment to make back up for the 4 months. Now imagine if you didn't have $2,000 to pay, how are you going to have $2,400 to pay now? I mean, yeah. The mathematics don't work. So when people talk about helping people, those sort of businesses, entities that really only look at the bottom line, when they talk about helping people, it's a joke. It is really for them to get back all the money in a bigger lump sum over a 2-year period. And nobody is doing anything about these things. And as a company too, and this is something I'm experiencing right now, the two little jobs that we get, you go and you have to deposit the check. Now, if the check is, you can't even go in the bank to deposit it. You're going to put it in the ATM. So automatically, a person is waiting 8 to 10 days before that check could clear if it's from another bank. And you got people calling or ask you, but we get a little job there. You ain't got the money ready yet. And they got to say no, because mm-hmm. the check has not. It's about 10 days. And now we have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And I have checks to clear. And I go out and check. No pun intended. The checks haven't cleared from week before. I know another one here to deposit, and I got to wait another 10 days. So you see, talk about the speed of doing business and all that. It's a bare joke, because I know that if you deposit, if I am at bank A and I deposit a check from bank B, and they know the money is there, why is it the check clearing? What's the problem? Is it that you must be the slaves to those organizations until death do us part? I mean,
so this is throwing up a lot of other issues.
Yes.
Yeah. That you're
and these are things that have been going on before, but mm-hmm. have been exacerbated by the COVID environment.
Okay. Well, we have a few callers on the line. I'm going to come back and ask you some more questions, and hopefully we'll be joined by some more small business people as the show goes along.
I hope
but let's go to the phone lines for now. Good morning. This is Brass Tax Sunday.
Good morning to you, Christina.
Good morning.
I want to wish you and your family and the Brass Tax family a really, really productive, prosperous, peaceful, contented 2021. We are going in onto the unknown in 2021 as a follow-on of 2020, but we put our faith in God, and we try to work with what we have. I want to say good morning to Punka as well, Wayne Willock. And I want to, before I make my point, I just heard him talking about the bank, and I want to say that I endorsed his remarks, because I have been saying for the longest while, I'm watching how, even before COVID, I saw how persons were experiencing financial difficulties who had lots. This is something Barbadians are very, very, they're very proud of, owning piece of the rock. And when I saw persons in places like Curtin and Crab Hill and areas that you wouldn't hear of having the lots advertised to be sold, and then you saw mortgages in areas, you know, these were average working class people who tried to own a property that would probably be the biggest asset they would ever have in their life. And then I saw what happened with COVID, and you hear comments about persons. I am saying that the Prime Minister seems to be concentrating mainly on how you get the business class out of the rut. But there are bread and butter issues, and Wayne Willock raised one. How the bank is treating, I know a friend who told me that what they did with her and the interest, even though she did not want the moratorium, and her, this thing about this moratorium and interest, the financial crisis as a result of COVID is impacting everybody. Everybody has to make adjustments. And I'm saying the bank is not seeking to make any adjustments based on reports you're hearing across the board. And some of the things he mentioned, I've heard other persons saying the same thing. And therefore, the government and the governor of the central bank need to get up off of the chairs and sit down with the bank and say, we are negotiating on behalf of the members of the society who would have been faithful clients of the bank. But you have something that is affecting the whole country. You cannot use the old methods that you would have used as a bank to deal with it. They're going to have to be debt forgiveness. They would have to be, you know, looking at situation where they take a little hit. You know, these are the things. But that's not my main point, so I don't want to spend too long on that. I want to refer to the president.
Go ahead, then.
Sorry, Christina, you were saying?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I want to refer to the press conference that was held yesterday. On the whole, I'm going to speak about these press conferences just to say, first of all, with the exception of yesterday, on all of the press conferences, as far as I can recall, there is something that to me is very disturbing, because I find it to be disrespectful. All of these press conferences start very, very late. If you say, and this is something that I have only noticed in this administration, because normally if the government say to you this before press conferences start at 4, you might get a 10 minutes of it. But by and large, sometimes they start on time. But sometimes you have an hour and a half wait, a half hour wait, 45 minutes wait. And I am saying to you, persons are sitting down waiting to hear what is going on. You interrupt something, you might... And I think the government needs to do better than this. It's disrespectful to people for their time. Thankfully, yesterday, Minister Jerome Walcott, I believe he was the lead person, and he probably did. He started on time at 5 o'clock yesterday, but they need to do better. If they say 4 o'clock, come 4 o'clock prepared. Even if you do 5 minutes late, 10 minutes, fine, but not half hour, 45 minutes, an hour, hour and a half, as we've been having, number one. Number two, we have said... that some of the journalists have not been prepared and they've not been asking the right question, and that is true. Although sometimes I wonder if they're given adequate notice to about this press conference so they can prepare themselves. But I would suggest to them, if notice is not usually adequate, and I would suggest that they keep reading up and researching these areas just in case press conferences are called, so they can have their questions at hand. I noted, however, a certain attitude for the last press conference, and even the one before that, I think Wednesday the 30th. Number one, we don't get really information, valuable information, and information that as a country we should be getting. And when certain questions, the rare occasions when a journalist asks a question that is very probing and relevant, the response from the minister or ministers is sadly, you know, it's unacceptable. And let me give an example. Last week, press conference. Sorry?
Go ahead, please give us the example.
Yeah, because you are having, there is a delay, so that's why I don't want to interrupt you. So that's why I keep asking. Last week, press conference, for example, someone asked the minister, can you tell us, Minister Bostic, can you tell us what is the cost of accommodating at the visitors at the Harrison Point and the other areas and the testing and all that? What is the cost of Barbados? He came up and said, I don't have that information. I do not know. Can you imagine? This is the line minister. He didn't even say, we will get back to you of the next press conference. I will have it and I will address it. Nothing so cut off. This is something the citizens need to know. What is the cost to us of paying for all these visitors and all that who have been testing over the period of time? Because you have to look at whether or not the money that they're bringing, the amount of money they're bringing, can really benefit us when we look at the expenditure in having them here. That's number one. The other thing that happened yesterday, another journalist. This is a guy I didn't hear where he was, which new media house he was from, but he had an accent, either Vincentian or Jamaican accent. He asked the most relevant question yesterday. He said, before you can have a bus crawl, these person must get permission from the COVID unit.
Permission.
And I would dare say the police as well. So he was asking the Minister of Health, can you tell us whether the COVID unit gave approval for this bus crawl? Because they come and they're quarreling about these bus crawl and how these prison officers would have bus crawl. So he asked the question. That's in your department, Minister of Health, Bostic. Tell us. Did the COVID unit give a thing? You know what the response was? Well, whether or not they give the approval was given, we have to deal with what is here before us, the situation before us, blah, blah, blah. And the third and final example I'll give you. Another, I think it's Alicia Braggs or something from CBC, or one, a female journalist, asked the CMO, the chief medical officer, they kept asking about the total numbers. We have 161 from the prison population, staff and prison and the inmates. But could you tell us the other numbers, what are the other positive numbers? And they had to go back and back at it. Then she asked him, can you give us a breakdown? He said it was 16 and 17, resulting in 33 total persons positive outside of the prison population, etc., and the staff. Twice, they had to go back to him with it. And then she said, can you give us a breakdown of the 33 non-prison cases that were positive? And she asked him twice, he came back and he said, well, I don't have information I can give you fully, except to say that some of those came through the airport and some of those positive cases came through contact tracing. Is that a breakdown? She asked, could you give us further information on the other clusters, the positive clusters, outside of what happened with the bus crawl and the prison population? Say no information. So it seems to me that this press conference seems to be just a matter of public relations. And they seem to think that once they say, we did 10,000 tests, or we did 124 tests, and it, 5 females and 3 males, and 10 people leave the isolation center, that is all the information we need. We have not been getting information. And I want to say that the result of all of this explosion of these positive cases has to be tied not to prison officers and bus crawls, but to the government's decision to open the borders to persons, traffic coming from the UK. Persons ask about whether that new strain is here. No information. They said they're working with WHO and PAHO and whatever. I am saying, when you compare press conferences from other countries, Trinidad, for example, and others, press conferences are not detailed. Not detailed enough for us. And all we're getting is a lot of fluff and all this sort of thing. And I'm not happy about it, Christina. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And I know that there are other people who have similar concerns over this. We can ask, is this spike in COVID cases, is this the result of people's recklessness and irresponsibility in isolation? Is it a consequence of some policy gaps? I know that people, this is a very difficult situation, and certainly everyone is working quite hard and diligently to see what they can do. But have there been any missteps or mistakes that have been taken at the policy level? I think one of the things that does cause people some anxiety is not knowing what is happening. So since we are generally on the receiving end of information, not having the type of information that we would like to have does cause some uncertainty and perhaps also mistrust of public officials, which is what we do not want at this point in time. I know for me, one of the questions that I had coming out of the press conference when there was an indication that there were two small clusters was, where do these clusters come from? And this is not just nosiness, but in terms of helping, even we may have known people who've gone to these places. We may have been at these places. Having this information can help all of us. But I mean, this is a mammoth task that these authorities are dealing with as well. So I think to some extent, we may need to bear that in mind while we are also critical. Yeah. Thank you for your call. Let's take another, shall we?
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Brass Tack Sunday.